Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for August 25th, 2013. I'm your host, David McLaughlin, and joining me as each and every week, welcome Catherine Smith.
Hello, greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, tonight on the show, we sent a call out last week on the program, and I think we did some calling since then, inviting all the DPG candidates to come on that wanted to, and one of those candidates requested a time, and that was R.J. Hadley. And so we're going to have R.J. on the show. I would have loved to have had the other candidates, but we're happy to have R.J. since he, values his time and our time enough to be on the show. And so that'll come up in about 10 minutes. In the meantime, we're going to talk about a host of topics around the South, and I want to start out in the state of Louisiana. Public Policy Polling did a poll, and one of the findings was very interesting in that Mary Landrieu remains very popular. And another one was just bizarre in that a lot of Republican voters don't really understand or either maybe they have a different view of the power of the office of being junior senator of the state of Illinois. But let's start off with Mary Landrieu. They showed that if her opponent was Bill Cassidy. I guess he's the leading Republican contender. If they had a race, that she would win 50-40. She's got a right side up, approval rating, still under 50, but 46. When you consider just how Republican the state of Louisiana has gotten, Tim, don't you feel this is good news?
Yeah, I do, but, you know, I have to qualify that. Two more polls released before, which were Republican polls, found her to be in much more trouble. Personally, I think the race will be closer than 10 points. But still, she has to be encouraged by this poll, yes.
Yeah, that's the thing. In Louisiana, today's Louisiana certainly, and really any time Mary Landrieu's ever ran, she's never had a double-digit win. Catherine, you looked at the poll. What did you think of it?
Well, I think it's good news, and I think it probably gives her a little bit of momentum, her team some momentum to, get out there and make sure they're able to win it. Even the text in the poll said that they suspected it would get much closer as the election gets closer, but that clearly she's got a lead and seems like it's a good name. Landrieu must be a good name in Louisiana because they said that.
Yeah.
Is it her son? Is also looks.
It's her brother. Mitch is the governor of. I'm sorry, not the governor. He's the mayor of New Orleans.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and obviously I think Louisiana with New Orleans is a lot like the mayor of Atlanta. It may not be a statewide position, but because it's the largest city in the state, it carries a lot of clout statewide still. Well, what that key finding, and it says it right here in the paragraph that Tom wrote, it said, it's important to note the 10-point lead for Landrieu is not likely to hold up. We've all three now said it, including the press release, but here's the finding that comes after it. 78% of voters in the race of undecided voters disapprove of President Obama. And so you got to think 78% of those undecided voters, probably two-thirds of those might end up going to Bill Cassidy, and that's where, Tom Jensen feels the race will tighten up. Tim, does that sound like a pretty accurate conclusion?
Not necessarily, and I'll tell you why. Historically, both she and her brother, you know, they have these jungle primaries there with all the candidates on one ballot. And historically, both she and her brother have pulled in about a fifth of Republican voters to vote for them, so that she seems to have always had a disconnect between herself and the National Party in that sense. Still, I think there's going to be natural tightening in this race. Like you said, she's never had a double-digit win. Louisiana right now is a very red state. One thing that may be hurting Cassidy right now is Bobby Jindal's approval, who, you know, just a couple years ago, we were talking about this guy was the most popular governor in America, and now he's one of the least popular. His approval ratings have tanked. Might be dragging the ticket down a bit with him. That's why, for instance, Mitch Landrieu, in a matchup with Senator Bitter, who is very well liked there, he actually beats Bitter. Another thing about Mary Landrieu, her favorable are 20 points higher than her unfavorables. People just naturally seem to like her. I think she's going to be a prime target, but I feel, you know, decent about her chances for hanging on to this seat.
Tim, that was a sad, sad statement you made. It may be true, but it's still sad that, you know, we've said that President Obama is not as popular as he'd probably like to be in Louisiana. You said Bobby Jindal, who is very intelligent, is not very popular right now with Louisiana voters, but you said that David Bitter is. And
yes,
honestly,
he is.
If you made me choose between Bobby Jindal and David Bitter, I at least have more respect for Bobby Jindal. So that's kind of the sad state of affairs. But I do think you're right about the Landrieu name and brand transcends party. And really, if Mitch Landrieu runs against David Bitter down the road, maybe he could take advantage of some of those shortcomings that, frankly, Charlie Mollesol was not able to, a very popular congressman in his own right, but I think part of that had to do with it was just an abysmal year. Catherine, we're seeing this a lot of places. President Obama may not be popular in a Republican-leaning state, but their Republican governor who's mismanaging the state government, he or she, I guess in the case of, say, South Carolina, is not popular either, so they kind of wash each other out. Then does it go to the actual candidates in the race, in which it should?
Oh, boy, I don't know. I think that 2014 is going to be, you know, it's going to be a long night, I think. I think that a lot of people are frustrated and they don't really know why. You know, they're frustrated with things going on in their state. They're frustrated with the national parties, and I think they're going to be frustrated right up until voting day. And who knows how they're going to? I mean, we may see something. We may see that break in polls between now and then. But I just think it's going to be one of those nights.
Yeah. Well, that part of the poll, I think we'd all agree, made sense. And even if Bill Cassidy would have been, you know, within the margin of error, or even if he was at one point up, we could say that made sense. They continue to take questions, and I'm not sure why Tom Jensen threw this one out there, but I'm so glad he did. He asked Louisiana Republicans, I guess he asked all Louisiana voters, but the subsample is Louisiana Republicans, which was more responsible for the federal government's poor response when the levees broke after Hurricane Katrina. And really, he should have worded it this way: President George W. Bush or U.S. Senator Barack Obama. Now, 29% blamed Senator Obama, 28% blamed President Bush. Now, maybe these Republicans are right. Maybe the junior senator of Illinois has more power than the leader of the free world. But then the question would be, why would the senator even run for president if he was giving up all this power being a group of one of 100? Catherine, what's going on here?
They just love to blame the president for everything. I mean, it's you know, they saw, was it more his fault or more Bush's fault? And, of course, everything is more Obama's fault than anyone else. So, I mean, it's stupid, and it's, but it's not surprising to me.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, there were Democrats in control. Ray Nagin was not one of them, by the way. Ray Nagin was a Republican that got elected as independent. But, Governor Kathleen Blanco was a Democrat. I guess you could have blamed the I'm trying to think. We didn't control the House at that point, did we? We got control in 2006. So we couldn't blame Nancy Pelosi. It's just bizarre. Well, Tim, this to me is a little different than, where they show that Fox News viewers say that Saddam Hussein was responsible for the attack. I mean, these are Louisiana voters that lived in the state, or you'd have to think 99 or 95% of them did. I mean, this is just ignoring history, correct? Willfully.
It's those Tea Party crazies. It's got to be. They don't just ignore history. Those people spend all day totally ignoring reality. how can they blame a guy that had just arrived in the U.S. Senate when this happened, in 2005? I mean, come on. What is wrong with these people? I mean, that's just a detachment from reality, David. And, Catherine's thing about him wanting to just blame any and everything on President Obama. They might claim that Hitler's attack on Poland was Obama's fault. Who knows with these people? But you know what? They made their bed with these crazies. Now let them lay there with them.
Well, and you lose credibility when you do this. Well,
right.
I'd like to welcome our guest for the evening, running for DPG chair and currently one of the vice chairs of the Democratic Party of Georgia. Welcome back to the Kudzu Vine, Mr. R.J. Hadley.
Thank you. It's good to be back. I appreciate you guys having me back.
Yeah, well, I mean, you've been on before, I guess, when you're running for the current office you have. And, people probably heard your bio at the time, but, we get new listeners for different shows. So give us the short version of your biography.
Sure thing. I am from Rockdale County and graduated at Dartmouth College back in the 90s. Oh, my goodness. came to Georgia 7 years ago, got active with the local party, worked with that, sort of got involved as an officer there, went on to become an Obama delegate, got active as a state officer. So I've really kind of come up through the entire process when it comes to local politics and state politics, and as you said, ran for U.S. Senate back in 2010, unsuccessful there, and this year ran for Rockdale Tax Commissioner in a historic year in Rockdale in which we swept all the Republicans out of office as part of our slate of eight, and it's really been very exciting.
Yes. Well, then that leads me to my next question. You're currently, serving as Rockdale Tax Commissioner. This is just a partial term. You're running for. What made you decide to want to run for a DPG chair?
Well, it's been a challenge over these last couple years as an officer in the party and being active as I have been over several years. I've gotten to know so many people statewide, so many people within the organization, really getting to see up close where the challenges are. And I really want us to come together. And I think I have a plan to kind of bring us back together and bridge some of those divides and just get us focused on winning and working together again. People talk about demographics are changing and things like that. I don't want to wait for demographics, because we don't need to to wait for demographics. We've got a good group of people. We just need to sort of come back together again, and I think I can do that.
Yes. Well, I'm going to ask you my final, big question of the night. Now, I postulated last week on the show when we were discussing the race. You probably have the best handle of any of the three candidates on grassroots. And then
yes.
I said that probably, your biggest challenge would be fundraising. Now, obviously, if you know, continue to be tax commissioner of Rockdale County, you'll have to serve there. And you can't collect money the same way for fundraising for a party as you can for a county tax system,
no.
if you will. So tell us your plan on how you'll raise the necessary funds for the Democratic Party of Georgia. And from there, I'll just pass it on to Catherine Smith and then to Tim Chifley.
Certainly. My plan, which I call the trust plan, it's a five-part plan. And the first part of that plan is that we do need to rebuild our treasure. And the first thing that we've learned over the past couple of years is that the chair has to dedicate time daily to calling and reaching out to donors of all levels. So the first part of my plan is to basically do what we know needs to be done in terms of a chair making those calls. That's one piece. The other part is actually not my own plan. It's a plan that's already been put underway by our DNC members to encourage our internal organization, our leaders, to give on a sustaining level monthly. Because again, if we're not going to be actively out there giving ourselves, it's a challenge for us to then ask for money of others. But at the end of the day, what's going to make my job much easier is if we get back to winning again. It's hard to ask for 10 grand when you don't have a statewide officer, when you don't have control of the Gold Dome in any way, shape, or form. It's just hard to make those requests. I will make those requests. I have to make those requests. That's the job that I would have to do, and I will do that. It's not like collecting taxes, as you say, but it's a job that needs to be done. But what I want to say is, look, let's get focused on getting back to winning and getting something that we can then make it a real argument to say, yes, this is worth putting your dollars here, because we're a party on the move, not what you see in the media right now. Then the last piece is I want to really engage the county parties in fundraising. We kind of have not, I really don't think we've used the county party structure to the full benefit in terms of fundraising and allowing them to take part in the fundraising plan. And the DNC has a model that they use for the state where they will allow, if you can pay into a program, and then they will make a pass at a list and then allow the state to make a pass. And you actually sort of donor share, as it were. And I think we can come up with a similar system. It won't work for every county party, but I think that we can come up with a system that will encourage them to get involved in the fundraising for the state level, and also give them a chance to raise some dollars for themselves.
Is it going to me? Tim, you want to go next?
Sure, I'll be glad to. Looks like we lost David or something
yeah.
there. RJ,
oh, okay.
How are you this evening?
okay, that went over well.
Yeah, really. this question is one that I guess needs to be asked. Obviously, all the candidates for the position think they're the best candidate for the position, or they wouldn't be seeking the position.
Mm-hmm.
What strengths do you feel that you offer that would separate you from the other candidates for the position? In other words, why are you the best candidate for this job?
Yeah, thanks for that question. That's a good one. For me, I feel that I've been there. I've shown my level of integrity, that I really am an advocate for transparency and communication, which is vital to what we need right now as an organization. There are so many gaps between the local party level, the state party level, and even at the national level, I think, with our state organization. And it's one thing to say, well, if you elect me, I can do X or I can do this. It's another thing to say that, well, I was there with you when the going got tough. I was there to raise my hand and say, hey, let's take a look at some things over here, when others sat silent. That, to me, shows leadership, and it's very tangible, and I think people can point to that. And I've been shown to be a bridge builder, to bring groups together. And then finally, I really don't think of the candidate anyone has that grassroots knowledge of the organization from the ground up that I do. I've been in a lot of, just in the last 16 days, I've hit about 40 some odd counties. So that's what I do. I mean, I'm on the ground. I'm in people's homes. And so as much as people want to say, well, you have a tax commissioner job, and I'm still doing my other role that I was elected for. And so I'm hoping that I can bring that to the body on Saturday and that'll be successful.
Yeah, you mentioned the grassroots, and that was my next question before I pass this over to Catherine. I, as you know, have long been part of that grassroots in one of the outlying mountain counties. And we have felt over the years that there was a disconnect between us and Atlanta, and that we were pretty much left to operate on our own, and so that is how we design things. Was it fair of us to feel that way, or was there really a disconnect between the state party and the various county parties around Georgia?
I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's not for a lack of interest in Chattooga County or lack of interest in Glynn County. It's just that, remember, this is a volunteer organization, and if there isn't a system in place to allow some redundancy of communication, it's easy to sort of feel that you're out there on your own because you're not getting any communication in and no communication is coming out. We don't know what you're doing and you don't know what we're doing, and so it feels very much like you're out on your own. But As I go from county to county and visiting with chairs, visiting with state committee members, this is why I'm very positive on this party. The energy is out there. It's not a matter of everybody's just not doing anything. It's just that we don't have a sense of what's happening there. And also, they don't know the level of activity at the state party. All they see is a negative, sometimes unfair representations in the media and the things that they hear through the rumor mill. We can fix that with a better communication system, and I think I have a proposal to do that.
Okay, and with that, I am going to pass it over to Catherine. Catherine.
Hi, RJ. Thanks so much for being on with us tonight. I hope won't keep you very long. I know you've got kids that need to be put to bed and dinner to eat and all those things.
Yeah.
But I'm really glad to have you on, and I'm looking forward to seeing you.
I'm in Georgia somewhere, making my way home. So,
my question is a little bit weird, and something that I've been thinking about a lot the last, 6 months or so, and that is that in over the past several years, probably 4 to 5 years, we've seen, sort of a number of organizations pop up around the state that are doing a lot of what have traditionally been thought of as party activities, like voter registration and voter outreach and voter education and, sort of appealing on specific issues. Some of it's all about issues, whether it's, the Georgia Rural Urban Summit folks or Planned Parenthood or, you know, the League of Conservation Voters, or Georgia WAND, which I'm a board member of. There's a whole bunch, you know, League of Women Voters, all these organizations that are doing a lot of the work that I think was left. I mean, some of it has always been their work, but I think some of these organizations are taking up a little bit more of what we have traditionally thought of as party work. So I'm wondering if it might be that, and they're having a lot of success at it. And you know, I'm often surprised by some of the, you know, numbers that I see coming out of some of these organizations, because I'm good friends with a couple of the people who are running them, and then I serve on the board of WAND. So, so I'm just wondering, sometimes I think that maybe the role of the party is changing, and that it really will be serving more as a, you know, as a candidate recruitment, qualification, coordinated campaign, sort of less of a grassroots organization, and more of an administrative body in some ways. And I'm not sold on it. I'm just wondering that if that's sort of the future of the party, and wondered what you thought about that.
Well, let's say this. To me, the overall goal should be the same of what it has always been, which is to find and elect good Democrats to office. Now, if that means that we are moving away from being a grassroots organization, then I'd have to challenge that. Because
it's just something that has occurred to me.
Well, I think my opponents disagree. We had a question similar to this at our August 3rd forum as to the role of these other organizations. I think that it should be, we're recognizing, hey, you're working with the same people that we want to get to the polls, and we don't have to get into turf wars over it. And if you're doing this piece very well and it's working out for you, that's fine. I don't think that we should, and really, I don't think we can come in and, as one said, we're going to set the agenda for these organizations. What we can do as an organization is be a learning organization. Remember our prime objective, find and elect good Democrats. And if as much as their tax status will allow, if we can work with these organizations, or at least be open to listen to what they're doing, give people, even if it's just the minimal thing of putting a link to what they're doing, I don't see any harm in that, because, again, the people that they're accessing may not ever step into a county party meeting, may not ever go to our website, but they'll go to that organization for whatever reason. What we want to know is how can we tap into that group to get them to the polls to get good Democrats elected. I do think that if the feeling is that we may be moving away from being on the ground and some sort of just moving money from one pot to another, that I think spells danger for the future. Because, again, when you look at the way we go county by county, and that's where people live, we want to have that activity on the ground, and we want to come up with a system to say, hey, you know what? What you're doing in Fulton County, what you're doing in Baldwin County, you keep doing that, because what that does for us statewide, it matters, and here's why. So I hope I answered your question.
I think you did. You absolutely did, and I think you're right.
I know there's a lot of concern about these groups. And
well, I'm not concerned about them. I think they're doing great. I think that we need to, you know, I don't want to get into turf wars with any of them, because a lot of them are reaching people that are not interested in politics, in party politics. They're interested in a specific issue or a specific group, and that's all they're interested in. Or they shy away from political parties for whatever reason. You know, sometimes I wish I had, but I'm only joking. I kid, but no, that's very helpful. And then my other question for you is, you did talk about t- time and, you know, how you're going to, it seems like you've got a handle on how you're going to manage your job as well as the party. What about your management style? Are you going to be able to sort of, are you expecting to hire some, you know, good people and put them on a road to success and then, you know, keep up with them but not, you know, what's your plan?
Absolutely. We've got to, in my 10-week plan to start out the first week, we've got to advertise for a good executive director, hands down, no doubt about it. We don't have the funds there yet for it, but we at least got to start advertising for that because that person is going to set the tone for what happens in that office. They're the professionals, and we've got to allow them to do what their experience and training allows them to do. Now, that's that piece. But then in terms of the state committee and in terms of the volunteer body, we've got to power up our committees again. We have committees, but if you look through, how many times are those committees meeting around what they're supposed to be meeting for so that people feel empowered? Time and time again, I talk to state committee members, they say, look, I'm on board. Nobody's asked me to do anything. I signed on for this, but I've never been asked to do that. I have some ideas for that. So I will have a job. Nobody's saying that it's a volunteer position, so nobody's saying the chair can't have a job. And what I want to do is make sure that we're delegating, that we're open to ideas, that we aren't closed off into small groups. This group knows this information. That group knows that information. That's just going to kill us in the long run. So I want people to feel that otherwise, why would they be involved? Why are you involved in an organization if you don't feel like your ideas are valued, if you don't feel like your energy is pointing toward any effort? So we've seen some of that, and we've seen that it's led us not into a good spot. So it's really a no-brainer for me. And my style is going to be, let's all get hands in. Let's get focused on work. We've got things we can bicker about and tear each other apart about. We've been through that, done that. Let's put that aside, and let's get on to looking at 2014 and seeing if we can shift the needle here and what we can do. A lot of excitement at the U.S. Senate level. But we've got these other statewide roles. Who are we going to get? We talked about some name folks. If they're not ready to step in yet, we got to find somebody. I don't want to see the governor, I don't want to see anybody get a free pass. We can get down to it.
I hear you on that, boy. Okay, well, great. Thank you. You've been very helpful. I'm going to turn it back over to David now, if he's there. Are you there, David?
Oh, I am. I was there the whole time. I'll tell you what's going on later. And, RJ, we want to thank you for coming on the show. Let's just say somebody wanted to help you between now and, I guess, election Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Or even on Saturday, because I don't think people realize that folks can go and support candidates and not be able to vote. If somebody wanted to support you between now and this time next week, we'll say, how could they do that?
Yeah, they can go to my website. It's votegafirst.org. They can email me there or give me a phone call. And we've been actively reaching out to strong Democrats in the area to let them know about the event and get them excited. Even though they can't vote, I'm hoping that we'll get some attraction. Because one thing, I don't think we do a good enough job when we come into areas. When you have the whole state committee meeting in an area, we really should pump it up with strong Democrats in the area and make it an event so they can come and see what's happening and hopefully get excited about the process and election season.
Well, that's good to know. And then I think you've posted on our page that you're going to be on. If you want to come, go back and post the website so people can link it that way too, that'd just be great. But
yeah,
thanks again for coming on.
I'll do that. And I appreciate you guys for what you do and that you do it week after week. And God bless you for doing it.
Thank you.
Thank you, RJ.
Take care.
Well, that you too. Well, RJ gave me a little segue to explain what was going on. This weekend I was gone, and I was helping my son actually start to obtain employment if you will, and then that caused me to have to drive around the South Metro Atlanta. I also did yard work at my parents' house, but my wife said for my birthday party, my daughter's birthday party next week, that I got to get some housework and yard work done around here. So while we were interviewing RJ, I was killing weeds. So I muted that so y'all didn't hear squirt, squirt, squirt. And I was on there the whole time, and I hope RJ was killing weeds at his house if he needed to while he talked with us, because people don't realize that on a podcast, I've done TV before, you have to be on visually and audio-wise, but on radio and podcasts, it's just audio-wise, so you can multitask like a crazy person, and y'all just don't know what all goes on these things, and on y'all's end too, so I'm just letting people in on what's going on the Cuddy Vine behind the scenes, if you will. Well, let's get on to some other topics, and one that I couldn't pass up, old Ted Cruz. He just, it's almost like he resents his parents for having him be born in Canada and be a Canadian citizen. He wants to renounce his Canadian citizenship, but apparently it's harder, you know, to not be a Canadian than he thought. It's going to take 8 months. He has to get a security clearance from Canada's spy agency. Didn't even know that existed. I don't know if they're related to the Mounties in any way. But, you know, I think he thought he could just say, hey, I don't want to be a Canadian anymore. It was all done. But it's a lot harder than that. Tim, why is this guy so anti-Canadian?
Because he's suddenly pro being president in 2016. That's why. I mean, he already knows what the rest of us are thinking and what the average person who hears this story is thinking. They're thinking, well, is this guy an American who also has Canadian citizenship, or is it the other way around, and won't this be an issue in 2016? Well, the answer to the first two questions is nobody knows, and the answer to the second one is you're darn right. It's going to be an issue in 2016 unless he clears it up and pronto. I mean, can you imagine him running the gauntlet of Republican primaries facing the most conservative voters and talking about his dual citizenship? Well, I don't think so. So he's got a problem here, doesn't he, guys?
Well, to me, he does have a CC problem, and to me it's not being a Canadian citizen, it's being a conservative crazy. But then, of course, you're right, in his primary that he'll be running in, they like the conservative crazy. They're just not so fond necessarily, maybe not, of Canadian citizen. Maybe those Tea Party Republicans don't hate Canadians as much as Ted Cruz thinks so. But, Catherine, let's say he were to win and he goes to meet with the Prime Minister of Canada, you know, about our border, the longest shared border in the world. Will this hurt him with, you know, international relations?
Well, you know, I have to say that I'm surprised to hear myself say this, but I think having a president with dual citizenship is a legitimate concern. I think that, you know, it does bring to light a question, you know, if you're the president of the United States and you're also a citizen of another country, if there is a conflict with that country, how does that play out? I mean, we don't usually have conflicts with Canada, obviously, but say it was another country. And, I'm thinking of my nephew has dual citizenship with Brazil and the United States. And I just wonder if we had I think it is a legitimate concern. So, but I don't know why it has to be so public. Like, just, you know, denounce your Canadian citizenship. Don't make a big deal about it. Just say, well, you know, I think that if I'm running for president of the United States, I should be just an American citizen. I don't think the Canadians would have any beef about it. I mean, I don't understand why it has to be a big issue. I do think it's a legitimate concern, though.
Tim, is this just Catherine's Michigan coming out in, or, you know, they share a border, you know, Windsor and Detroit
no,
are right there
Canadians.
In the Upper Peninsula.
I love
so we don't worry about it as, you know, down here. We're so far away from Canada, but, you know, maybe, what's that movie that Alan Alda was the president in and John Candy led the Americans? You know, maybe in Michigan they have a lot of that going on, right, Catherine?
We love Canada and Michigan. I spent a lot of time in Canada when I lived in Michigan. It was easy. But, no, I mean, maybe I'm crazy. I just do think that there could be a little bit legitimate concern.
Yeah, I don't know.
Actually,
you know, maybe I want to – now, Tim, I wonder if, like, does he order fries with his hamburger or does he order a donut, you know, some words?
Actually, I like Canada. Canada's a beautiful country.
It really is.
It has a lot to offer. I think, you know, it's for obvious reasons, if you want to live there, you need to live right along the border for weather reasons that, you know, everybody up there understands. But, you know, the thing I keep coming back to is that obviously Ted Cruz is the one that thinks this is a problem, or he would not be doing this. And doing it loudly.
Yeah, that's the thing
I don't understand. He wants somebody to notice that he is renouncing his Canadian citizenship, and I believe it's Republican conservative primary voters that he's going to need in states like Iowa. And
Why else would he do? Polling on this already? You think he's already polled on this issue?
Yeah, maybe
he
has.
Right, I do. Yeah,
I think he has too. But then once again, I mean, this the Tea Party people. You know, we already knew that they were like really, really concerned with the southern border. Now these characters are just like super concerned about the northern border. I mean, are they going to really start getting concerned about, say, the Atlantic coast and somebody coming over from Europe by, you know, water?
It's beyond that. These people are suspicious to the point of paranoia. They are suspicious of any little thing that does not seem to be in lockstep with their idea of America as they wear their paper mache hats. And Cruz has got to have these people. I mean, he's got to have, these are his people. This is who he's got to use to catapult himself into the top tier of Republicans for the nomination in 2016. So he's got to answer all questions right now. And this dual citizenship thing is a biggie with a crowd like that. I just guarantee you it is. I guarantee you he's polled on it. I guarantee you he knows there's a problem, and that's why he's trying to get rid of it and make sure that they notice he's trying to get rid of it.
So basically, if you went to a Tea Party event, serve ham, not Canadian bacon. Don't put maple syrup on anything. Don't talk about, you know, the punting on third down and anything else considered Canadian. No hockey talk, although they love Sarah Palin and she loves hockey, so I don't know. Maybe they're going to start being suspicious of her.
Yeah.
No,
they're saying something more insidious about it. They're saying, is this guy really an American?
And then people are going to
hear that.
Here's the bigger problem. People are going to say, is this guy really an American? And they're going to hear his name is Cruz, and they're not going to think that he's from the northern border. They're going to think he's from the southern border over that one, and that's going to be the real problem. You know, and so this guy's a real, I'm trying to think, vexing, if you will. He's the Canadian that people might think is Mexican, but he wants to be more American than you know, most of us can be or whatever, right? So it's kind of a situation there. Well, let's talk about Republicans not trusting Republicans. And Lindsey Graham, we've been talking about how he's not seen as the most tried and true Republican in his own party. And now people are saying that Jim DeMint could be targeting Lindsey Graham. He may have in the past, and now he may be, you know, releasing radio ads against the Affordable Care Act and attacking Lindsey Graham for giving some support to it, or at least a not enough opposition. Could Jim DeMint go after Lindsey Graham in the primary by, you know, of course, supporting a different candidate? And will this be effective, Tim?
Well, you know, DeMint's taken over the Heritage Foundation, and he's turning it into an extension of the most conservative elements out there. And these conservative elements obviously do not like Lindsey Graham. It all goes back to the Affordable Care Act, because Graham has had the temerity to state that, among other things, the House taking those 40 votes to defund the Affordable Care Act is a waste of time, which is akin to committing the unpardonable sin, according to these people. And yes, I do think that his group will actively work against Lindsey Graham in the Republican primaries.
Okay. Question for
and
you.
And I think they could be.
Go ahead, Kathy.
And I think they could be successful.
My.
Yeah. They could be. Well, let me ask y'all then this, since y'all both chimed in a little bit. Will they pick a specific candidate? And if so, who will it be out of this primary contingent to run against Lindsey Graham?
Oh, I haven't looked at all of them. I'm sure they'll pick
one. We've got the lady for the Citadel. They've got another, state senator, Tim, that the week when we talked about her, you said was already more established, if you will. So they got two at least.
And he is actively courting the very elements that we are talking about. He is actually speaking at numerous Tea Party events. He's been well received.
You're talking about Graham or DeMint?
No, I'm talking about this state senator that is announced. I forget his name. That is announced that he is running. And he lacks the two big things at the moment that he's actively working on trying to get, and that's name recognition and money. And you're going to need plenty of it to defeat Lindsey Graham. He's not going to be easy to beat, but they're going to try to get him. These people consider him to be a rhino, an insider, a guy that's willing to work across party lines. They don't like that. They don't think that's a good thing. They want, as long as they're not in charge, then they feel the proper and patriotic thing to do is obstruct. And Lindsey Graham just simply does not operate that way. And they hate him for it, and they're going to go after him. And now that DeMint is not a senator down there himself, the chains are off him, and he can feel free to assist them in doing it, and he's going to do it. And if it's not this guy that we're talking about, then it's going to be somebody. They're going to find somebody.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And if that happens, this thing will get real interesting real quick, and like I've told you before, I really think it's going to be the most interesting primary race in the country. It's certainly a senator seeking re-election. What do you think?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know.
For someone seeking re-election, because I got to tell you, we're going to have a lot of fun here in Georgia with these Republicans.
Yeah. But I will say this, if Jim DeMint comes hard through a surrogate candidate at Lindsey Graham, that's a little juicier, because I don't think the guy running against McConnell has any chance. He's 57 points down. Don't think we'll get that as a topic. I don't think Kane is going to make this race. If he does, and he challenges Mark Alexander, or Lindsey Graham for that matter, to an Inferno match, then all bets are off there. Well, Catherine and Tim, I was reading Peach Pundit this week, and I actually saw something about the Football League, which we have a team in the Football League, actually won the regular season, and my son manages it for us. But I happened to see there were comments, and I thought it'd be about football. Somebody put something about the Eastman Gun Shows not allowing guns, although this sounds crazy. They had a link. I clicked the link. I actually looked at the rules and regulations of Eastman Gun Shows. Can y'all guess what is banned at Eastman Gun Shows? Did y'all see it?
I didn't see it. I saw that link that you sent me, and I didn't get a chance to look at it. So,
I'm sorry. Catherine, you're probably not able to guess this one. Tim, it sounds like you've read. What's banned?
Guns?
Yeah, well, no loaded or holstered firearms, I thought was interesting, and no loose ammo either. Now the question is that local ordinance there? Are they afraid of the feds?
Yeah, that's all their shows. That's like a standing rule at their gun shows. No loaded guns. Doesn't matter if you have a permit.
Uh-huh.
Police officer's fine. You have your little permit that I'm sure the NRA fought hard for, and they try to get you to join the NRA long and hard. I bet they get cut of that if it's through their website. But they don't want you to take a gun to their gun show. And I tell you what,
you can take an unloaded firearm, an antique gun for sale. You just
can't take
one with a live load. You can't be holstered yourself, and you can't walk in with loose ammo. It's got to be in its original container and package.
Why not? These are the same people that attend these shows and promote these shows that want you to take loaded weapons into churches, shopping malls, airports, everywhere they don't belong, and then in their little area where all their gun lovers are, they say no guns?
I'll tell you why.
What's going on here, Tim?
No, I know why. Because I worked at a Civil War show in Dalton for years where they had some, shall we say, fabulously expensive things for show and for sale. Well, somebody walks into something like that with a loaded firearm, what can they do? They can commit robbery.
Can you do that at a shopping mall? Couldn't you steal the offering plate at church? So guns don't commit crimes. Well, that's
when you're running from them guys, it's different. Didn't you know that?
Yeah. but I thought the whole argument was if you had a gun and then all those gun show guys had their loaded guns, then they could shoot the guy. I thought that more guns made everything safer. So they're saying guns don't make things safer. I'm getting
Isn't
confused
that
here.
Interesting? Yeah.
I'm getting confused here, Catherine. What's going on?
Well, I have to say, this is not really on topic, but I will say, I think the best evidence against this argument that, you know, guns make people safer was the way that receptionist handled that gunman in DeKalb County last week. I was so amazed that she had such calm and you know, that is the exact situation where people would have said she should have had a gun. But she didn't have a gun, and she handled it. She took care of it. You know, she stopped the guy from shooting anybody. I mean, it was really amazing that is the example that we should all be striving for.
Yeah, and these are the folks that they want to have guns in school. I mean, guns everywhere, but then the one place where you think they should actually have guns at the gun show, they don't want guns.
Well, I think Tim's absolutely right. They don't want to get robbed.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of reasons they don't want guns. They've probably met a lot of these weirdos that collect these guns. They come up for a cake, and they don't want them packing either. Now, I will say this. Good for Eastman Gun Shows. They actually say that they don't want a bunch of objectionable racial, sexist materials, no hate mongering, and nothing that denigrates the office of the presidency or the president is allowed. Good for them on doing that. But it's just crazy that they don't allow guns at the gun show. You know, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind exploring that one deeper in future weeks because I'm just baffled by it, if you will. Well, talking about a guy who I thought was kind of moving towards the center, Tom Coburn, he's made some comments recently that are more reasoned. Well, this week, I guess he was, you know, people were complaining about him on the right, so he decided to come out and say that he thought the president was getting closer to impeachment. Now, Catherine, we know that there's a lot of folks that are just ready to impeach the president simply because he has a D after his name. You could pick any one of, you know, 100 million Americans that put a D after their name, and there's a certain number of Republicans that would then want to impeach him. But what did the president specifically do this week that made him more likely to be impeached?
Well, I don't know if it was this week or over the past few weeks, but I suspect he's probably talking about the NSA stuff.
But it hadn't been going on. I mean, is that new news?
Well, but maybe it's just, I don't know. I don't know. Did he say specifically this week, or is it just that he finally got a chance to say something and that's what he said?
Yeah, I mean, personally, what I was looking for is I figured if he said it, I'd see a bunch of Google ads everywhere I went on the internet asking me to submit money for Tom Coburn's campaign. And, you know, you say something crazy like this, and then you ask for money, right, Tim?
Yeah, right. You know, he's an idiot if he actually thinks that. And since I don't think he's an idiot, he's doing it for another reason. And I think he's saying that for the benefit of his base. It's well known that Oklahoma was the only state that the president did not even carry, you know, one congressional district or one county or anything in. It was the reddest of red states. Perhaps Coburn is just playing to that base, reckon?
Maybe so. I didn't realize that, Tim. That was a good factoid. You need to take up Chuck Todd's mantle and produce, I guess, the 2012 version of Why Barack Obama Won, where you go state by state with insight like that. Well, let's continue to knock a few things out. The Virginia governor's race, one of the better races, probably the best race for 2013. They had a bunch of polls come out. They all show Terry McAuliffe winning. Additionally, a big Republican consultant this week led former gubernatorial campaigns, ran Eric Cantor's campaign or was an advisor, he joined McAuliffe's staff. I really never thought McAuliffe would build this much momentum. I thought he might win, but I thought it'd be kind of a squeaker. Catherine, what's causing Terry McAuliffe to pick up so much momentum this early, and will it last?
I think it'll last. It's not that far away, right?
Well, November, yeah. I mean, it's got to last another 2 months and 2 weeks or something.
Well, he's probably, you know, he's got a lot of experience with campaigns. Maybe he learned something in his last campaign and is, you know, taking advice from experts. And, you know, I imagine he's working the state, and so that's one of the reasons. I'm sure he's driving around or flying around all over the place. So I'm sure that's part of it. It's got to be.
Yeah, I mean, I got the sense that Terry McAuliffe was not good with first impressions in Virginia, but maybe he's getting a chance to make a second or third impression. Tim, what do you think?
Perhaps this guy's announcement, Marcus's announcement, just shows that some Republican insiders in the mainstream of the Republican Party up there, well, it just shows what they do think of Ken Cuccinelli and maybe the whole GOP ticket. You know, we've talked about that on here, how conservative they are, what some of the crazy rankings of their candidate for lieutenant governor. Seemed to have just drugged the whole ticket down and just really not made them look desirable. I mean, the average John Warner supporter, let's just pull that name out, we know what kind of, you know, man John Warner was in the Senate, what would they think of this ticket right now, and how far to the right it has lurched? And perhaps this guy is just letting his displeasure be known by saying, you know, for the good of Virginia, we do not need to elect these people. What do you think, David? Is that an angle or what?
That could be that this whole ticket's gotten so far right that the whole thing's gotten away from Ken Cuccinelli, who wanted to go right to box everybody out in the primary, but then it worked so well now that
he can't come back.
He can't get elected.
He can't come back. Yeah. The people below him on the ticket may be keeping him from coming back by constantly throwing these bombs. And McAuliffe seems to be maintaining a small, steady lead. When's the last time Cuccinelli's been ahead? It's been months, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a problem here, and we'll continue to discuss it throughout the weeks. Well, I want to thank R.J. Hadley for coming on in. And if we had more weeks, like we said, we'd be willing to have other candidates. But the election will be Saturday, so should one of the other two candidates win, or they just want to be on to tell how they'll support the Democratic Party of Georgia going forward, we welcome either DeBose Porter or Doug Stoner. But until then, it's been the Kudzu Vine.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and...